Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to XYZ, the podcast about CNC, automation, robotics, technology, and more. My name's Aaron Goff. I'm the owner of Goff Custom, and I'm joined today by Nick Frank, an extremely frustrated Nick Frank, because we've just spent the last half an hour battling fucking technical issues.
I'm out of breath.
You're already done.
Yeah.
It's really funny. We actually just started recording the podcast, except I didn't press record.
And I gave you all my best stuff at the beginning.
I know, right? I know. What have you been up to this week, mate? How are things going?
Things are good. It's been a busy week for production and a busy week for getting our Haas up and running.
Ooh.
Yeah, which has been super exciting.
Yes, you showed me it doing a tool change before.
I did. That's the only thing I know how to do now.
So. Was it brown trousers time the first time that you did a tool change on that?
No, I mean, I think I knew what to expect. But it is fast. Now, though, I'm like, could be faster.
Is there a faster setting? Is there a plaid setting?
No, I think that's, I mean, I'm just kidding. It is
pretty fast.
Shockingly fast. Yeah. Yeah, one. I think it's 1.5 seconds.
Yeah, fast enough that you're not going to get your hand out of the way.
Yes, but it does have door. Yours might not have this, but it's got an interlock or something. I think that's what it's called.
Yes, my machines do not have that.
You can just get right in there with a...
Oh, yeah. With a pinky or an index, whatever you want. Whatever you feel like losing that day.
Yeah.
So is it fully set up now? Are Haas coming in to commission the machines?
It's commissioned. So when we got it, it was in a state of like the preparedness for shipping. So they like lock the spindle down to the table. They cover the whole thing in this gnarly blue grease.
Blue?
It's a thick layer of blue grease.
I'm used to the Cosmoline, you know, the Russian AK-47 grease, that brown stuff.
Oh, I don't know. I've never had an AK, but... this was a nice... shade of blue.
Ooh,
it's got some protective stuff on it, and then the controller is inside the in a box inside the CNC the enclosure. Oh. And then they come in, scrape all that blue grease up, leave it in a pile on my floor.
Is that really what they did?
Yeah.
Oh,
well, not on the floor directly, on a piece of cardboard. It took the guy all day. Wow. He didn't go to the bathroom once. I didn't see him take lunch break. He was dedicated.
Wow. That
yeah,
good.
He got the job done.
So are you guys getting like a training session or something on the machine? Or you
yeah.
Or?
Yeah. We will get a training session. We're debating whether or not we're going to take it right away or save it for... when we, you know, need to ask more, maybe less basic questions rather.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's funny because, you know, I've been playing around with it and every time I have a, like, I think of a question or I want to look something up, I just Google it and there's a YouTube video for it. Like, Haas is amazing like that. There's just so much, many online resources, so much online content.
Yeah. One of the things I really love about Haas is the, I think it's diy.haas.com, and you can go on there and actually like buy parts for your machine.
Oh.
You just put in the serial number of your machine and then it shows you like every part that you can purchase for that machine.
No way.
Yeah.
I hope to not have to do that anytime soon.
Well, sure, but like...
it's nice that you can.
Yeah, and that's one of those things that I wonder about immediately. Whenever I look at a new machine, I'm like, where do I get parts for this? How much do they cost? You know?
Yeah, I mean, I think we were always... We had a, like, Haas was our top pick, but we did look at other machines and we did our due diligence, and it just didn't seem like you had those same resources with a lot of other machine tools. So we looked at like Doosan, because Paul Reed Smith Guitars, they have Doosan machines. And Doosan's are really cool. I think they're a bit more bigger, more robust, maybe.
Is that how it's pronounced?
Doosan?
Doosan. Doosan? Doosan?
What was I saying? Doosan?
Doosan?
Doosan. I've heard it said a few different ways, but yeah, I mean, those are cool. And then we looked at like a CR Onsrud, which is more like a traditional woodworking router.
Like a router.
But, yeah. But yeah, I mean, Haas, the resources are just crazy.
Yeah. No, 100%.
It's amazing.
And they do all those like tip of the week stuff. And they really do get into the nitty-gritty of it, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. What's that guy's name? Mark Terryberry?
Yeah, that's the one.
It's a great name.
Yeah. Very memorable.
So how have you been?
I've been good, busy this week. Got knives back from DLC coding on Monday.
Oh, nice. How did they turn out?
Good. Actually, I had only one that needs recoding, which is fantastic. Out of 40. That's a pretty good ratio.
Wow. Yeah. That is really good. Is that the best you've yet, or have you received a 100%?
I've received a 100% batch. Ooh, the problem is I've had 100% batches both ways. I've had 100% acceptable and 100% rejects.
Right.
The latter is never nice.
You're never sure which way the scales are going to balance for you.
That's a little bit, but the thing I'm most excited about this week is I'm actually working on design for a robotic sandblasting cabinet.
Oh, you've mentioned this to me before, and I'm trying to picture it because, like, I picture a robot obviously holding a sandblasting gun.
Right, and that would be a pretty straightforward way to do it if you just have like money at the wazoo.
Right, like a robotic arm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But basically what I'm doing is, so it has two parts. It has a part that holds the knife and rotates it. So it holds the knife vertically, like hanging down, and then it rotates it around from that axis. And then it has another part that holds the sandblasting gun. And it can move the sandblasting gun up and down, and it can also angle it up and down. 45 degrees, or 90 degrees in total.
So there's the it's on a linear rail.
Yeah, so basically the structure's a bit weird because like the inside of a sandblasting cabinet is like the most horrible possible environment for a mechanism,
for sure,
any kind.
True.
You've got a high pressure abrasive sand flying around everywhere. So basically, it's the whole mechanism is contained within a bellows. The bellows is actually like a vacuum hose, or it's going to be a vacuum hose, because actual bellows are incredibly expensive. It's like $300 per bellows, and I need two of them to go in there.
Yeah.
So it's four round ground steel rods that act as the linear rails, and then the carriage that moves up and down has like a seesaw in the middle of it, and the seesaw has a pivot that acts as the middle part of the seesaw. And that pivot actually protrudes out of the side of the carriage. And then it's driven by two belts. So if you pull up on both of the belts, or if the motors pull up on both of the belts, the whole carriage moves upwards. But if you just move one belt, or you move them in opposite directions, then it pivots. And that's the mechanism that drives the sandblasting gun.
Very cool.
Yeah, so it's going to be super fun, because I've designed it so that all of the mechanical parts are 3D printed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so like it's either bought from McMaster, laser cut from sheet steel, or 3D printed. That's like, so the outside enclosure is all laser cut from sheet metal.
So you're making the enclosure.
Yeah, everything's from scratch.
Wow, that's so cool.
It's one of the more complicated 3D models I've ever done, that's for sure.
Really?
Yeah, but it's going to be... I can't explain to you how much I hate sandblasting.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. Well, once you get that sorted out, you can come in and automate our spray booth.
Well, I was actually thinking about that because I feel like this exact same mechanism would probably work pretty well for spray booth application. The only problem is when you're trying to like get in behind the horn on the guitar, things like that, where there's not really like a clean line of sight.
Yes.
You know, I think that's kind of the spot where you like really need like a proper robot.
Now I've seen spray setups where they just have sort of a spray head in the middle of a room, and that's just, it's got a 360 degree fan pattern, and the guitar is moving up and down, turning side to side. And then also I think sometimes, like, that's really good for acoustic guitars, but yeah, like for electrics with cutaways, I think sometimes when they have these setups, they just go in there after and hand spray the cutaways.
Interesting. Do they? So I know that they do some electrostatic stuff with NBF. Yeah. Can you do electrostatic with a guitar body? Is that a thing?
I know that people do it. Yeah, like Taylor guitars. I'm pretty sure it's
interesting.
They negatively charge the guitar, positively charge the lacquer.
Because my understanding is that makes the spraying process a lot more forgiving.
I would imagine
the charge is kind of like evening out your spray patterns. And...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're getting way less overspray, I believe, as well.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Very cool. Yeah, I'd love to do that. I don't know if you saw that. I saw it the other day that Torma are releasing a 6-axis robot arm.
Really? Wow, yeah. Those guys do it all.
Yeah. So they're the new one. I think it's like a 20-kilogram. Let me double check real quick. I think it's like a 20-kilogram payload on this robot for like $20,000. Wow. Yes, of course. But like, that's pretty good.
What are those UR? Is it UR robots?
Yeah.
Those aren't wildly expensive either, are they?
They're like, well, I mean, $20,000-ish, I think.
Yeah, okay. That's so in the same ballpark, right?
Yeah, that's for the 5-kilogram payload one. But there's also another difference too, though, which is the universal robotics arms are cobots, collaborative robots, right? So if you don't need any like shielding or guarding around them, you can have a person like in close with them.
Right. If it bumps into you, it has stops.
A load Whereas meter. I'm not sure that the Tormach one is.
Ooh, that's interesting that they would not make it that way, because I feel like their applications are more focused towards smaller
shops.
Manufacturing.
Yeah. Yeah, a cobot would make more sense there. And the collaborative robots are really cool. Like, I went to, I'm not sure if you've been to this yet, the Canadian Manufacturing and Technology Show.
No, I mean, I signed up recently because I'm like, who knows if it's going to happen, but I want to go.
So I've been twice, and it's amazing. There's tons of robots and lasers and CNC machines and stuff, and the coolest part is a lot of the CNC machines are running, you know, the robots are moving. But yeah, they had a demo where there's an uncaged collaborative robot, so it's out in the open, and you can just go up and like smack it, and it stops. You know, it waits for a minute, and then it starts moving again, and you can just like stick your head in the way. I mean, I wouldn't give it a knife and then stick your head in the way.
But if you were had a robot in your shop, you would give it a knife.
Oh, I definitely would. Definitely. I actually, I on Kijiji, which is our, you know, that's our like local Craigslist or whatever, you know, the use stuff online. I found a guy that was selling a 6-axis Kawasaki robot arm for like $3,000. It was like a little baby one too. It was only like 2.5 feet tall. I had to work so hard to make myself not buy that thing.
That's where you go from being like, you know, Aaron, the knife maker in his shop, you know, working hard, to evil scientist.
Yes, 100%. Because I'd be immediately like, how many knives can I mount on this thing?
Yeah, it would corrupt you for sure.
Yeah, how wildly can it flail them around?
Yeah, you just start throwing them and teaching it, jiu-jitsu, I don't know.
So on the topic of going to mad science, it just reminded me of this. I posted a YouTube video for it, which was exciting.
You did?
Yeah, I did. And in the video, I'm showing some hard milling of a knife blade. And one of the comments on the video, someone wrote, "Why don't you just learn to grind the bevels by hand?"
That's jokes.
And I was just like, but that got me to thinking, like, you know, you and I both make a conscious decision to use CNC in our processes rather than doing stuff by hand.
Yeah. Like, because we've done it by hand before.
Yeah, exactly. I've seen you guys build guitars by hand. I've made knives by hand. Like, what do you think drives you the most to use CNC rather than doing stuff by hand?
I think maybe once you hit a certain volume, it just becomes not as practical to do it by hand. And there probably are places that maybe are doing high volume and doing it by hand. This is the technology we have available to us, and like CNCs excite me. I think they're cool. So before CNCs were available, if we were back in like the, I don't know, 60s or 70s, I probably would have thought a pin router was the coolest thing ever. And that would have excited me, and I would have embraced that technology.
Yeah, and I would have been into like cam-driven screw machines and stuff. Yeah.
Right. That stuff still is really cool, and I could see myself getting into that if I wasn't bitten by the CNC bug. But it's so cool.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, it's funny because there's this whole like, handmade, or we always joke, it's like people will say like, my guitars are made by hand, no C and C.
Yeah, that whole argument bugs me too, because it's like, well, I showed someone the other day commented on one of my older videos where I'm using manual milling machine, belt grinder, drill press, you know, and they're like, well, with all that equipment, it's not really handmade, is it? And I was well, buddy, don't look at my newer videos. Like, you're not going to like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. For me, I was thinking about it after this guy asked this question, you know, because I don't know. Like, whenever somebody says something like that online, I feel like I have two options. I can either, like, take offense to it and be like, fuck you, buddy, you know, like, get wrecked. Or I can be like, okay, let's treat this as, like, an innocent question. Like, what is the answer, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's really about maintaining my sanity. Like, I can't imagine, you know, like, I know other knife makers that will just grind blades for, like, 5 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't do it. I don't have, like, the mental fortitude to do that. I would go nuts. I would stop making knives.
Yeah, the process would start to lose its charm. And you become a robot yourself just doing it. Like, when we were building them by hand, we attempted to work within the same tolerances we try to work to within now. And it just took a lot more time. And then, you know, if you're like roughing out the neck of a guitar, 90% of that is a waste of time. I mean, it's got to be done, but there's no value in that.
Yeah.
So we still will hand carve necks, but we get it to within a very close, size and shape.
Before you start going to
because all that roughing was that's not for a skilled laborer to do.
Yeah,
it's a waste of time. It's just going to cost the customer more money. I mean, we'd have to charge three times as many. The first year we made guitars, we didn't have a CNC. In this shop that we're in now, and we built maybe like six guitars that year, maybe eight.
Right, and that's not a sustainable business unless it's not a sustainable like business. 20k a guitar or 50k a guitar or something.
Yeah, unless you want to just throw bodies at it. Like, this is the person that carves necks. This is the person that joins tops. This is, you know, it's like you've got 30 people in a shop doing it.
Well, and that's the opposite of automation. That's kind of the Luddite way. You would employ a lot of people. No one would make very much money, and it would be hard, dangerous work.
Yeah. I mean, maybe you could make it work. Sounds gritty. Whatever. I mean, it's fine. I think ultimately it's the end result that matters, and who cares how you got there, as long as, you know, nobody was harmed in the making of it. Right.
Mm-hmm. I prefer to keep all my bits still attached.
Mm-hmm. You haven't lost any?
No, I did. Well, I think I was talking to Craig about that a couple of episodes. I did come close a couple of times.
Really?
Yeah, one was in box 47. I nearly lost probably most of my left hand to that table saw.
To the table saw?
Yeah. So the table saw that was in this shop, as you remember, was what, a 5-horsepower cabinet saw. No guard, no splitter, no riving knife, no safety features of any kind. Just a mm-hmm. blade sticking out of the table, you know. And I was cutting like a roughly square piece of like 1/4-inch thick MDF. And, you know, I don't use a table saw very often, so my technique probably wasn't the greatest. But the back left-hand corner of the square piece of wood caught the back, like the rising edge of the saw blade.
Yeah.
And it pulled the whole sheet of wood across diagonally across the blade and took my hand with it.
Ooh.
Yeah. And then it fired the bit of wood into me. Like, and then I had to kick measure. That. Yeah, it fired the bit of wood into me, and then it stuck in the wall behind me.
Oh,
yeah, and then I never touched that table saw again. I was just like,
really?
Fuck this, yeah.
That sounds scary. I've never had anything quite so close. The piece of material, especially when you're doing like sheet goods, climbing mm-hmm. up the saw,
yeah.
Blade is a like I think that's a common way to get yourself into trouble because people all of a sudden see the blade isn't there anymore because
the material to, like, push their hand down on it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so you see people lose like 3 fingers always in the same place from doing that. Yeah. From pushing the saw the piece of wood back down. Ooh.
Yeah, it's terrifying. Ooh. And this is one of the other reasons why I like CNC stuff so much, right? Because it keeps me far away from all the spinning dangerous bits.
Yeah. Except you still want to stick your head right in there, don't you?
Yeah. There are times when
you get comfortable. I mean, our gantry mill is completely open, and I'll like get right up to a router bit, just with, like, you know.
And that's bad too, because on a traveling gantry router like on yours, the spindle itself can move at you.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I mean, whereas... and sometimes you forget. You're like, oh, this program jogs across the table rapids. Randomly, right. Or like, you know, to go to the next operation, you forget about that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's bumping into you.
Yeah, whereas on a VMC, it's a little bit safer because the spindle only moves up and down, and it only moves instead. So, you know, to get yourself in trouble, you would have to put your hand directly into the cutting tool or underneath the cutting tool and then have it wrap it through your hand or something.
Right. You ever just look at that spinning bit though and go, what would happen if I just grabbed it?
Well, so there are stories on Practical Machinists, you know, the machinist forum, where people are like, oh, Haas machines are so shitty, you can totally just reach in and grab the spindle and stop it.
Oh, no. Who are they telling that to?
You know, like, maybe if there's something deeply wrong with this Haas, like, maybe you could, but even
I wouldn't
then,
do that
like,
to a handheld wood router.
No, God, no. Like try and grab the collet nut by hand or something.
One thing I've gotten in the habit of doing is probably bad, but totally not actually that sketchy. Is when I turn like the drill press off, and I want it because I want to like change the drill bit. I'll just grab the chuck to stop it.
Are you wearing gloves while you're doing it?
No, that would be more dangerous.
Well,
I just put my hand around it and slow it. I just use my hand as a brake.
Yeah, I don't think we're allowed to say that on the podcast. I do not condone this practice.
Before. Don't call WSIB on me.
Yeah, please.
But I learned this. I witnessed a guitar maker do that. And I was like, that's smart.
It's not smart. Just because someone else is doing it doesn't mean you should be doing it.
It saves me seconds, though, on drill bit changes.
Seconds. So. Yeah, yeah.
I can't be held liable for recommending that technique, right?
Okay, so do you just have like a single phase motor on your drill press?
Yes.
Why don't you chuck a 3-phase motor on there and a VFD?
Well, I suppose I could, but I don't know. You want me to Tim the Toolman Taylor my drill press?
I actually ended up with a spare 3-phase motor. So I'll give you the motor to stop you doing that stupid thing.
I'll film a video and I'll send it to you. It's not as I said, it's not as sketchy as it sounds. These things are slow.
Sure. Yeah, that means I've got a lot of torque. Come back and talk to me when you've been degloved.
Yeah. Now that I wear a wedding band, thank you.
You wear that in the shop too, eh?
Yeah, I do.
We're supposed to be giving people good advice on the show, not bad advice.
This is practical advice.
I'm going to fire you. You're not even going to make it to the end of the second episode. You're going to fire. All right, let's talk about some stuff that's less dangerous. Space.
The Final Frontier?
Yeah.
That sounds wildly dangerous.
It is. Yeah, have you ever heard what happens if you just like go out in space with no spacesuit?
I've seen what happens in sci-fi movies.
Was it
you freeze to death immediately?
Yes, exactly. Right after all your fluids boil out of
you, and then you shatter.
Oh, someone hits you with like a little helmet. Well, so I don't know whether you. So this is a recurring segment on the show. You're going to have to get used to space news. I don't know if you're interested in space at all.
I like it. Yeah,
it's cool. Like as a concept.
Yeah. No, I mean I've dabbled in space.
I don't know where you're going with this. I'm just going to bail you out. So I don't know if you saw that SpaceX was chosen as the sole provider for lunar landings for the US's Artemis project.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. So they're going to be landing people and equipment on the moon with the goal of like setting up a base there.
Really? Moon base? Yeah,
moon base. It's like some Dr. Evil stuff.
James Bond.
Right? But honestly, man, it's hilarious. So there were three entries. Dynetics, I think it was, the National Team, which is like the United Launch Alliance and a bunch of other American companies, and then SpaceX. And the other companies had these tiny little dinky landers, like the Apollo missions, you know, little cute. And SpaceX were like, we're just going to land in a apartment building. They showed, because it's Starship. It's their main rocket that they're working on. But it's like, this thing's like 100 meters tall or like 60 meters tall or something. Like it's huge. And so all the other companies, their proposals were these like little cute dinky landers, you know, that take like two people and be cramped. And SpaceX are like, no, don't worry about it. We'll just land an apartment building. You can send like 20 astronauts. It'll be fine.
So what? They must have had a way bigger budget then.
No. That's the crazy thing. They were the ones that were asking for the least money.
Oh, you never go with the cheapest contractor.
Well, it's just because they're reusing a lot of their equipment, right? Yeah. Whereas everybody else is like throwing stuff away, you know.
Unless they have one of those unplanned rapid disassemblies, is that what it's called?
Yeah, rapid unscheduled disassembly. RUD. Yeah. Yes. Well, they might have one later this week. They're actually going to be trying another Starship launch, like another launch of one of their prototype vehicles this week on Friday.
And is that why you watch it, for the crash?
Well, the crashes are exciting, especially because there's no one on them. So you can be like, yeah, and you don't have to feel like, oh, someone just died. No. No, the crashes are nice, but it's also super cool when they actually land something.
Oh yeah, that's wild that they're doing that, just plopping it down right on the right on target.
Yeah, seriously. And it's literally so like the new rocket, their plan for it to reduce costs is it's not going to have landing legs. It won't need them because it's going to land right back in the launch cradle. So like. The like super close fitting assembly that holds the rocket up when they're launching it, they're gonna land it back in that.
That's nuts. That seems like too tight a tolerance.
Right? So like we're thinking, you know, thousands of an inch. For them in this case, like half a meter would be like disaster.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to seeing what happens.
I like how brave they are. They just come up with these wild ideas and
Then just go for it. Go for it.
Yeah. It's inspiring. Well,
and that's actually why I think that I associate with them so much, because they really are like doing the startup mantra as a bigger company. You know, they're move forward, fail fast, you know, like just not try not things cheap. Out. Well, actually, the funny thing is, like, they're cheaper than the competition.
That's wild.
So, like, their main competition in the States is ULA, the United Launch Alliance, which is I think it's Northrop Grumman and Boeing. I can't remember who the two companies are that are kind of in this joint venture. But their approach is like, everything has to work the first time. Everything will be engineered so that it can never, ever fail, even right. during development. You know?
Right.
And that means that, so there are two companies in the States that were contracted for what they call the commercial crew missions, which is where they're going to send astronauts to the International Space Station. And the only company that has actually managed to send payload or astronauts to the International Space Station is SpaceX.
Really?
And the other company that got like almost double the money, the Nordic Launch Alliance, they haven't even like gotten their launch system working yet. They have like old Atlas rockets and stuff that they kind of been using, but they haven't sent anything to the International Space Station.
They're too picky.
I don't know. It's just a really interesting... So in software, there's two kind of approaches, which is the waterfall system, which is where you have big releases once a year or something, right? And everything has to come together for that big release. You know? And then there's the more modern approach, which is called agile, which is where you build things a little bit at a time, you release weekly, you know, everything's getting tested together often because you're kind of building everything at the same time. And I see United Launch Alliance and SpaceX as like kind of the physical representation of those two like software development methodologies. You know, ULA is trying to do everything and it has to all come together at the end and work better.
Mm-hmm.
And SpaceX is trying a bunch of different stuff. They're fine with rockets blowing up in the meantime during testing. You know?
Yeah.
But they're going to move fast and like find out what doesn't work. I think that's really cool.
It's definitely more exciting.
Right? Well, and not to be completely off topic, but it does have a lot of useful things to teach us in small businesses too, right? Like SpaceX are kind of doing the lean development thing, right? Like
right.
They're changing, constant improvement. They're doing Kaizen. You know, they're right. you know, keeping everything as minimal as possible, including like building out launch infrastructure and even like processes and stuff. They're going to try it at a small scale before scaling up.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas ULA is like, our engineers have decided on this method and we're going to follow this to its logical conclusion.
They're an eggs and all in one basket type.
Yeah, that at least that's been what I've seen, you know. And that's not to take anything away from like the people that are working super hard inside ULA. It's a different management philosophy. That
if you're listening.
Yeah. If you're listening, please don't drop a rocket on me.
Yeah.
Oh man. I'm super excited for you with that Haas, dude. Like you guys are gonna have your business go to the next level over the next little while.
Yeah, I mean, I hope it makes the difference. It certainly is going to be faster, more repeatable. I think more, you know, the fact that it's a more robust machine, we're going to have less issues. Certainly, we won't have similar or the same issues that we've been experiencing.
It's going to be interesting though, because I kind of feel like this. So with the sandblasting project that I'm doing, you know, I'm taking some time away from production. I have to. To work on this thing that'll hopefully make production better in the future, and you're kind of going to have to do the same thing.
I know it's already sucked up some of my like production time because still in the shop, like Tim and I are still doing a huge amount of the labor.
Right.
And we like doing it, but in order to grow the business, we sort of need to start to hand off some of that labor. And like that's part of why, you know, bringing this new CNC machine in, we're going to be able to increase our production and hopefully be able to hand off maybe some of that like operating that machine, because it should be simpler. Like we're going to really try to dial it in. There's a lot of like random stuff that's just kind of up in my brain operating the current machine, kind of like. It's just a little bit finicky. So hopefully...
Yeah, we won't be having to like change out sets of tools and stuff. There's a lot less to like screw up. Yeah,
exactly. Sense. So we're going to set this machine up for production.
Yeah.
And then that might be something I could be able to hand off. And, you know, what we'd like to do is start doing new product development. Just being... You know, running the business more lean. Trying to... increase production, increase efficiencies, do those fun projects like building a sandblasting robot. I don't have a need for that right now, but I won't.
Spray painting robot. Is that something that you guys would look at in the future, like getting a universal robotics arm? And like, with those ones, I believe you can teach them. You can hold it and teach it. You know?
Yeah. To use it for spraying. Yeah. I wonder if like the motion would be right for that, because say if there was a big pause, like if it had to pause between two motions, and it's just like, you know, blasting your guitar with lacquer that whole time.
Just a big puddle of
lacquer. But I mean, we're interested in that stuff. We tend to take the road of the path of slow growth, but yeah, I mean, all that stuff is super exciting.
I take that path too, just because I don't have enough time to do it. Anything faster than slow growth.
Yeah, exactly. Well, if you say it like you mean, like you planned for it, that's your style, then, you know, it makes
sense. I plan for growth so slow, you can't even really see it.
Yeah, well, you know, everyone knows the story of the tortoise and the hare.
Okay. What about the snail and the tortoise?
Yeah, exactly. Which one are you? Which one am I?
I'm the snail, for sure. So I don't know if you saw, or, sorry, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was hoping for an update at your shop.
Oh, in terms of like what I'm working on.
Yeah, where you're at. It's just you in the shop right now.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, I guess we talked a while back, and I was moving to the bigger shop out in Scarborough, and I brought on my buddy Mike to work with me.
Yeah.
And like that was good. Like, I really liked Mike.
It seemed like you guys were cooking.
Yeah, we were getting a lot of stuff done, but I found it really, really stressful. And I found that I wasn't doing any of the extra stuff that I had wanted to do.
Right.
Because I was so stressed.
Right.
Like, any time that I had to myself, I basically like lay face down on my couch and was like, oh God, I'm so stressed out, you know.
Yeah.
You know, just because fixed expenses were huge, and if there was ever a month when sales didn't keep up, then I would just get like snowed under by fixed expenses. And, you know, it was pretty brutal. So yeah, like now I'm in a much smaller shop, it's only 500 square feet. I've gone back to being solo, which is good and bad. Like, I like having everything happen on my schedule. That's really nice. I don't have to like show up for an employee. You know, I don't have to like do extra work on a Sunday because the employee needs it on Monday.
Right.
But I do really miss the like social interaction. I'm like a hermit. You know, especially during COVID, like I haven't seen any of my close friends in person.
It's so weird.
Yeah,
because you used to, when you were at the old other shop before on Carlaw, you would have like lunch with Jeremy every day.
Basically. Yeah, so like Nick knows that there's this other guitar maker that was in my building, and this other guy Jeremy and I got along really well, and so he and I would have lunches together every day, and you know, like we were kind of supporting each other as both like solo entrepreneurs. It was great. And there are some people like that in the new building. Some I don't really see eye to eye with, let's put it that way. And others I do. But because of the whole COVID thing, like I'm not going to be like going around to people's shops and having lunch with them. So yeah, it's been a bit weird. It's been kind of isolating. But despite all that, the stress has been a lot lower because the fixed expenses are like insane.
That's really nice. Yeah. Overhead is a scary thing.
100%. You know, so like last week I got behind on my production schedule as of like a couple of weeks ago. And so I worked extra hard to catch up, and I sent a batch of blades out to DLC for coding. And then I just took last week off.
Oh, you know? That's so nice.
Yeah. And I can do that because I have the flexibility that I don't have an employee that I have to, you know, keep busy.
Yeah.
And my overheads are low enough that like a week off isn't going to kill me. And it was a convenient gap in the process because I was just waiting for blades to come back from DLC, which normally takes like a week. You know? So I worked on the sandblasting cabinet stuff, you know, like
you did like days off at the shop.
No, like, I didn't do days off at the shop. I stayed home. But
you worked on the sandblasting cabinet in CAD.
Yeah, in CAD.
Okay, I gotcha.
Yeah, because there's a lot of CAD work.
Yeah. Okay,
and also, actually, so one thing that might be of interest to the listeners and like to you, like for designing custom machinery, like one of the things that's the biggest pain in the ass is like, oh, you have a door, you need to put a door handle on this thing. But like, you know, how far apart are like the holes for the bolts that hold that door handle up? like how much clearance do you need for those bolts? You know, when you open the door, like where does the door handle go, et cetera, et cetera. And the most amazing resource for me is McMaster Car have 3D models of like everything they sell.
And you can import them right into Fusion, right?
Yeah, yeah. You can click a button and like put a part number in Fusion and it just drops right in. So this like 3D model that I've been making with the sandblasting cabinet, you know, it's half parts that I designed. And then the rest of it is like McMaster parts just dropped in.
That's amazing. Yeah. And you love shopping at McMaster, so.
Oh, I do. So I spend a ridiculous amount of money with them. But you know what? Like, they're a little bit more expensive than if I was to go out and find like a specialty door handle supplier or some shit, right? But then,
yeah, of course,
I would spend so much time like trying to find a door handle, and then I don't have a 3D model of it or anything, you know. So,
yeah, I don't know what it is about that website. It's just
about McMaster's website.
Yeah, it's so easy to use.
Yeah,
they have everything, and they don't even tell you what it is. Be like okay, I was shopping for dust collectors recently. Right. And I was like, just check McMaster Car. I didn't end up buying it, but it's like unbranded.
Yeah, they don't tell you the brand.
Dust collector. And I was like, something about it, you know, just thinking maybe McMaster Car, like, you know, did their due diligence and picked a good one. I don't even know if that's true.
Yeah.
They could have picked a shitty one.
Honestly, but I kind of believe that they do their due diligence at this point. So I know whenever I buy a hand tool from them, it's either US made or like German made. And it's like nice, you know? A while back, so I have a full face respirator that I use in the shop a lot. Mm-hmm. And I bought cartridges for it and they showed up and they didn't fit on my respirator. And I was like, what the hell? Did I order the wrong ones or something? You know, so I ordered another set and they didn't fit too either. And so I contacted McMaster and I was like, you know, like I bought this respirator, I'm using the same part number and I'm ordering replacement cartridges for it and they don't fit. And they were like, oh yeah, sorry. Like, so the parent company that made this respirator got like bought by another company. And they changed all of the threads on their cartridges to be like the parent company's, you know. But McMaster sent me a new full face respirator for free to fit the new cartridges.
No shit, those things are expensive.
Yeah, it's like $250 US, and they just sent it to me.
That's nice.
You know, like
that's
I know
good customer service,
right? And so, like, yeah, I do spend. I'm not their biggest client. I'm not their smallest client either.
You're not platinum, but you're gold.
Silver.
Silver.
I think one year I worked it out and I'd spent like 12 or 13 grand.
Ooh, that's brave calculating that final tally. I wouldn't want to do that.
I have to do it. But, you know, like that's like air hoses, abrasives, hand tools, you know, eyewash stations, like all sorts of crazy stuff. You know, anything that I'm not going to get from Amazon or from like a specialty supplier. Basically comes from
we do the same thing. Like all when I was hooking up the air to the from the new air compressor to the current air lines we have in the shop into the CNC, I just went on McMaster Car. I ordered every single fitting that I needed from them. I ordered air hose.
It showed up the next day.
It was all here the next day, and then I missed a couple things, so I put in another order. I'm still missing some stuff, so I'm going to put in another order. Yeah. But yeah, it's probably my favorite website.
It's crazy. It really is crazy, and it's I don't know. I'm spoiled. Like my parents are still in Australia, and they're like, "Oh, you should move back to Australia." Like it's, and I always think about that because the weather is nuts in Australia, especially compared to Canada. Like, we just had snow here today. It's like supposed to be spring. We had snow here. So Australia is looking pretty good right now. But then I remember that Australia doesn't have McMaster, and that just rules
couldn't
it
out. Do it.
Yeah. Can't do it.
Yeah, no, I mean, that is an unappealing feature of Australia. That for me, the weather, I would just.
You don't like the weather?
I would burst into flames.
Well, you're a ginger, and, so yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. And all the deadly animals.
They're not that deadly. My girlfriend and I, when we went to Australia, we went looking for some deadly animals. I wanted to show her some deadly animals. And we didn't find anything. I couldn't find her anything dangerous to show her. It's very boring.
But walking down the streets of Toronto, you're like, there's one. There's one. There's one getting off the bus.
Yeah.
Just people.
Only if I see you.
Yeah. That's right.
So
that's why you won't sell me one of your knives.
Yeah, exactly. it's enough crazy people running around already. So I was just going to say, like, one thing I wanted to give a shout out to with the listeners is over the last couple of weeks, I had a bunch of people contacting me just saying, like, giving me encouragement and saying that they like the podcast and that they want it to continue. So I just wanted to give a special thanks to a couple of people. I'm just going to read some names off here real quick. You can look the other way. Cameron Klein, Scott Hoadley, Robin Israel, Made Lyle Style on Instagram, Atraxia Guitars, you should look up that. PD Picasso, Archie Salka, and Winsong Forge. I just wanted to say a special thank you to all these people who, there's some backstory that I'm not going to share with a guest that was supposed to appear and then ghosted me. And, you know, there was some times in the last couple of weeks where I was just like, you know what, maybe I'll just pack it in. But, it was really nice having people reach out saying they wanted the podcast to continue. So hopefully they still like it now that you're here.
Yeah, this is my podcast now, so they can beat it.
Yeah, right.
They sound like nice people.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of those nice people have questions for us.
Oh, cool.
So we should have a look through. So Ben's Bites on Instagram says, can you provide some more information on the diamond drag knife that you recommended for Maker's Mark engraving? I looked at some on Amazon, and the biggest complaint was that they dull quickly on glass. So I don't know if you've seen this, Nick, but there's this little tool that I use for engraving the logos on my knives, or actually serial numbers. For the logos, I use a chamfer tool. Mm-hmm. But then for serial numbers, I use this little like spring-loaded tool that doesn't rotate. It just drags a diamond along the steel.
Yeah, that's cool. I have seen these before.
Yeah, and they work really, really well. So if you have to do some engraving.
Because it must just be moving the metal out of the way.
Yeah, it's just like squishing the metal.
Which is, so does it leave a ridge or sort of like an embossment?
Yeah, it does leave like a little tiny raised up.
I kind of like that. I feel like that's a nice feature.
Burr.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it looks great. And I've done some engravings. Maybe I'll post a photo of it on the Instagram account. But I grabbed a scrap blade that had DLC coating on it. And then I did some drag engraving through the DLC coating. So you have like a bright silver engraving, you know, contrast on the black DLC. Yeah. And I was doing stuff like little flags, like little tiny Canadian flag or Australian flag, even the US flag with the little tiny stars and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole flag's not even half an inch tall. And with the diamond drag engraving, you can totally make out all the detail. Like it's super, super fine.
And if you were to use your engraving... like router bit or end mill, would it not have that same, would not work that way?
The main problem is that you have to know exactly where the surface is. If you're going to use a chamfer mill, like the tip of a chamfer mill, you have to like within, you know, a thousandth of an inch, you have to know where the surface is. So if you're a machine, if you're engraving a surface in the same setup as where you machined that surface. So if you come in with a face mill and you make a nice flat surface and then you engrave on it, you're fine.
Right.
But if you have to like take the part off the machine and then put it back in, it can be a bit dicey. You know, like if you're trying to make like a really, really fine engraving, if you're going deep, like 10 thou or something, totally fine. You'll be fine. But if you're trying to do like a really fine engraving, like only a couple of thou deep, then it can be dicey. You know, if that material has moved a little bit after you unclamp it or whatever, then, you know. So the really nice thing about the spring-loaded tool is that it doesn't matter. You know, the part could be like 50 thousandths higher or 50 thousandths lower, and it would still engrave.
And it doesn't matter even if the spring is being compressed more? No. It's not going to dig in more?
Not with my material because it's very hard.
Right. So we'll have a glass. Is this going to be a...
I'm not sure. So Ben's Bites says that, you know, the biggest complaint was that they dull quickly on glass, but I'm not sure if he's planning to use it on glass or if just other people were and they weren't trying on steel or whatever.
Right.
I don't know.
Interesting. I wonder why glass wouldn't work.
Well, I know that it does because they do. They score glass using these kinds of engravers for doing stained glass and stuff. I think.
So it just dulls quickly. You don't have a long tool life.
But I mean, for me, on hardened steel, I mean, so the thing is, I'm not engraving very much. I'm engraving a tiny little serial number. It's like 4 characters. You know, they're 100 thousandths tall, the characters. So, like, but for me, a tool lasts like 2 years.
Wow.
you know, and the replacement tools were like $50 for the just the diamond insert, right? So for me, it's very reasonable. But I guess if you were cutting like, you know, a dozen feet worth of glass a day, then like, who knows? So Ben's Bites, like the two options that I know of that are good are the one from Torma, which is only $80. And that comes with a TTS shank, like the Tormac Tooling System shank. So it's a 3/4 inch diameter shank. So if you've got a tool holder that you could stick that in, then that might be a cheaper way to get.
That's a significant shank.
Yeah. Well, because that's what they're supposed to use instead of their, like the BT-30 or CAT-40 or whatever, right? It's they have this like straight shank that gets pulled in against the
spoon. Oh, that's the shank of the tool holder.
Yeah. So in this case, the tool holder is actually the like engraving tool. It like all comes in one piece. Yeah.
Okay.
Which, if you have a Tormac and you want to do engraving, then like that thing makes total sense for $80. Like, why wouldn't you do it?
Because it comes with the tool holder.
Yeah, exactly. For me, I chose an option that was 3 times as expensive and didn't come with a tool holder.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So the one that I got is from Widget Works Unlimited, and it was $180, but it's made in the US. The quality is really good. I haven't had any issues with mine. And I will admit, the first time I used mine, I somehow fat fingered an offset or something, and I just like pile drove it right into the vise. So like there's like a moving bit in the middle that compresses the spring and then has the diamond on the tip of it. And I just smashed that right through the back of the tool holder, destroyed the spring and everything. So I had to buy a new spring off McMaster. I had to get a new diamond for it the very first time I used it. But, what a bummer. After fixing it all, it still works. So, So I definitely recommend that because I still use mine. I bought it 4 years ago, 5 years ago. So,
and that you put into a Cat 40 tool holder.
Yes. Yeah. So that one's a 1/2 inch shank, and I just mount it straight into them. I think I have it mounted in an ER collet chuck, ER25.
I'm on board with the ER25s now.
Yeah, so Nick called me the other day and he was like, ER32 or ER25, what do I do?
So Aaron what did test you do? I was calling him and not saving it for the podcast.
Yeah.
I needed to make a decision.
Write it down in the show notes.
I'm holding a itty bitty ER25 collet in my hand.
Itty bitty. I guess you're used to the ER32s.
Which is so funny because, I mean, we're using ISO 30 tool holders.
Yeah, you're using the tiniest little tools.
And the biggest, well, not the biggest collet, but a significant collet.
Right. Is your router ISO 30 or ISO 20?
ISO 30.
Oh, wow. Okay. It's bigger than I thought it was.
It's not, I mean, they're not that small, but compared to the Cat 40, they're adorable.
Yes. Sorry, you haven't loaded up any of the ER25 things yet, I guess?
We did. I put like, I put in a 1/2 inch end mill upside down, like in reversed, for probing the... so that the Hostech could probe in the tool probe, calibrate the tool probe.
Okay, gotcha. Oh, dude, okay, so on the Maritool website, so Nick and I were talking about where he should buy tool holders and all this kind of stuff, and I said Maritool, because Frank Mary, the guy that owns Maritool, is a lovely dude, and he's looked after me well over the years, so I sent everyone there, because the prices are super reasonable, and it's really good, so consider that a plug, Frank.
Yes, and I named you when they ask when I'm signed up. They say, "You know, how'd you find out about us?" And I just wrote Aaron Goff.
Oh, nice, nice. Everyone else should do that too, and then maybe they'll send me a free T-shirt or something. But yeah, so Maritool actually sell precision ground tool setter calibration tools.
Yes, it's made mounted to a Cat 40.
Yeah, it's all integral with a Cat 40 chain.
Exactly, yeah. And I wanted to buy one. I think they might be out of stock right now. It said contact them for stock. I haven't yet. Because before we got the machine commissioned, I asked, do I need to provide that? And do I need to provide a ring gauge?
Yeah.
And the answer was, they'll do that all when they get there. So they didn't say, I took that as they'll provide it.
But, well, they should.
Right. They should. Which they didn't, which I was a little bummed about.
They didn't bring a ring gauge, or anything?
They didn't bring a ring gauge. Wow. They had a bearing.
Oh, that works.
It works. And I was like, okay. But I'm going to go buy a ring gauge. This stuff is, it's like you know, YouTube can teach you how to do this. There's videos on calibrating the tool probe. So I would like to buy the Mari Tool probe calibrator, calibration tool. At the same time, you know, you can just do it with, like, I could even get a pin gauge.
And it is cheaper. Yeah, I have a tool holder, but I did that too. I have a 3/8 like set screw holder with a 3/8 dowel, and I just leave that tool alone. I just have that attached.
Okay, so this was my question. I was going to do this, and a ER collet has a collapse range from, so say if we were thinking a half inch, from 500, like 0.500, to 475, something like that. I'm making these numbers up. Well, the 500 is legit.
Right. It's like 60,000 or something.
Yeah. So if I wanted to use a half inch pin gauge, will a half inch pin gauge, 500 thou diameter, accurate to within a tenth, fit inside a half inch ER 25 collet?
Yes.
It will. Because that would, it's just like, are they the exact same size?
Right.
That's my question. Right. Well, the 500 thou pin isn't going to fit into a 500 thou hole. It needs to be undersized. Or
the collets will kind of expand a little bit in my experience. Like just a couple of thousands. But if you've got something, you know, like a dowel pin or whatever, that's like a couple of thousands oversized, it, in my experience, it will still fit in a ER25 half inch collet.
Well, okay. So this is the other, but so it's, it says it will, it fits or 500 thou, or is it saying it'll fit 499 thou?
Right.
No, I think it will fit 499 thou ring pin gauge.
Right. No, I think it will fit a 500 thou.
Okay.
But
you want to bet a $20 ring gauge or pin gauge?
Sure. Absolutely.
No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I guess a half inch gauge pin's not cheap.
No, but I mean it's so if I'm being cheap and bootstrappy, a tool holder with a pull stud and a ER collet and a pin gauge is going to be $80 to $100 less than
the Mari Tool calibration.
Yeah, maybe I was also looking at another brand as well, just because the other brand was in stock.
We shall never speak of them.
What is the name of them?
No. Only Mari Tool gets plugged.
Anyways, it was $260. The Mari Tool one's like $235, but it might not be in stock.
Well, yeah. Just call them. Did you call them?
I haven't. I have called them to check stock before. Very nice people.
Lazy bastard.
I'm a busy man. I got podcasts to do. And
that's right.
That's the max amount of time I want to spend on the phone in the day.
So should we take another listener question here?
Yes, I interrupted that segment. Sorry.
All right. So Rock Solid Scales on Instagram says, what implications are there for the model gear of a CNC? I imagine that the controller doesn't change that much, but maybe it does. So I don't know. I don't know how much experience you have with this game.
When we bought our
new machines, right?
Yeah, when we bought our Axis machine, I asked for a reference, somebody I could speak to, and they gave me the number to this guy who was really nice. He was extremely happy with his machine, but his only qualm was he bought the last machine that had the old controller.
Oh, okay.
And he was like, I just felt like I got ripped off. Right.
The next guy got a way better deal.
Yeah, he got the new controller, right?
Right.
And the old controller on it was like a one bar of a screen.
Right.
So you can only show one line.
One line of characters.
Text. Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah. So I felt his pain. Yeah. So since we bought our machine, which was, I guess, 6 years ago, the only thing they changed was added a e-stop right onto the remote handle.
Which
I don't think I would want that though.
Why?
I feel like I'd bump it. We disabled one of the e-stops on it because it was malfunctioned.
You got to stop saying stuff like this on the podcast, man. Why didn't you fix the e-stop? Why did you disable it?
Because you can just grab the tool holder to stop it. The handbrake. I'm kidding.
Oh my god! You're gonna get fired.
No, that e-stop is too close. there's a pause button that works. You know, I can stop the program.
Okay, let's move on.
I do sound bad, don't I?
Yeah,
you do sound okay, terrible. So with the Haas control, we got the next gen. I don't know when they came out with that, but there was a generation before that. I don't know. Maybe they'll come out with another one tomorrow. Well,
as far as I know, they've had three generations. There was like the original one with the LCD screen, and then they had like an updated version. Sorry, original one with like the CRT screen. And then they have an updated version with an LCD screen. And then they have the next gen, which is like, it looks roughly the same, but it's all new inside.
Yeah, it does look the same. And this newest one that we got, they just, I think they just added recently the touchscreen.
Oh, okay.
So it's a touchscreen now, which I have found, I mean, with my very limited time with it, kind of handy, but I still was just using the keypad and like the buttons.
It's interesting because this goes both ways. Like, it's nice to get the newest thing, but sometimes the newest thing is not well tested out yet. And I know that Haas, when they first released the next gen controller, there were people in Practical Machinists especially that were like really shit canning this controller because they'd gotten a brand new machine that had this controller on it and it would just do crazy unpredictable stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like there was one guy that said like, the machine would be sitting there doing nothing, and then suddenly it would just like launch itself at rapid, you know, 6 inches to the right. You know,
yeah,
like,
I heard somebody about their Z plunging right down.
Right, that's not something you want to see happening on a brand new, you know, $100,000 machine, right? So, yeah, in some cases, like getting an older control that was well proven out could be kind of a nice thing. You know?
Yeah, probably. You might lose some of the features that they've added, but
So. Yeah, specifically in answer to this question from Rock Solid Scales, I know for a fact that there are a couple of controls that you do want to avoid. So the older Haases that have the CRT screens, they had a particular type of CPU called a cold fire, and that's no longer made, and Haas have discontinued support for that control system. So now if you get one of those machines and then like one chip fails, the only thing that Haas will tell you is that you have to replace the whole control with an upgrade for like $15,000. Oof. Yeah, so I think there are some third-party companies that do like board-level repairs on those machines to try and fix that issue. And I know other people have started like, you know, their control dies, so they retrofit it with something else rather than paying Haas the $15,000. I don't know. In that situation, I'd probably go and pay Haas personally. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's like that might be an issue. So like, Haas with CRT screens are kind of risky. And then for Fadals, so Fadal had two main controls. Well, three. Well, four-ish. They had the 88. They had the 88HS. They had the 32MP. And then they had the 104 something or other. And the 104 control was, like, horrible. It was, like, getting recalled when Fadal went out of business. Like, it was really, really bad. So, like, if you find a machine that has that, don't get it. The 32MP and the 88HS are basically the same, except the 32MP had, like, an extra computer in there, like a DOS computer, so you could, like, load files on from the extra computer. And then the 88 is, like, the snail version of the 88HS. It's really too slow for modern use. So, yeah, there are some things that you should avoid, but, like, I don't know, you have to really play it case by case on it. Which,
what does yours have?
Mine has the 88HS, so 88 high speed.
Right.
And I can totally run, like, you know, modern toolpaths coming out of Fusion 360, like doing adaptive clearing, all that kind of stuff. No problem at all. It's not as fast as like a brand new machine would be. I do. So when I'm doing 3D contouring, if I'm doing a section that ends up being broken up into a lot of tiny arcs or a lot of tiny straight lines, then I will see some stuttering. And it's actually not because the control can't keep up. It's because I have like a little widget installed that lets me transfer data from the USB stick to the machine over serial. Because this thing doesn't have like a USB port or an SD card.
Right, of course not.
So
it takes a floppy disk?
Yeah, seriously. Well, one of mine actually has the hole for the floppy disk in it.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. But that serial connection isn't fast enough to keep up sending the data at the rate that it would need to for like some of the modern toolpaths that are doing like really fine detailed 3D contouring. But I do a lot of 3D contouring still. So yes, long-winded answer.
How do you upload, Rick and Morty episodes?
You saw that one. So I that's actually on the screen itself. So I replaced the LCD screen on my Fidal. And I'm pretty sure that LCD screen has more processing power than the Fidal does. Because I can plug a USB stick into the back of the LCD screen and then play like MP4 video files directly on the screen. Yeah.
That's hilarious.
That screen is great. It's so funny. Like, if you buy an off-the-shelf screen replacement for a Fidal, it's like $800 or like $600 US. It's crazy. So I found this like screen that's designed as like an industrial monitor for like security applications and stuff on AliExpress. $120 US, delivered in like 2 weeks, and works perfectly.
Unreal.
Yeah.
That's wicked.
I actually did put a post about, if anyone else has a Fidal that needs a new screen, I made a post on Practical Machine just about that. So if you just search my name or just Fidal, cheap Fidal screen replacement, you'll find it. It was so easy. It happened to be just the exact right size to bolt into the existing bezel.
That's crazy. Like, it had even the right, the screw holes were in the same place?
No, I kind of like, it has like a bracket on the back of the screen, and I like unscrewed that and then put the bezel of the CNC in between the bracket and the screen, and then like screwed it back to clamp it in place.
You jammed it in.
I jammed it in. Yeah, so if you like grab the screen and like, you can move it around if you really like, you know, reef on it, but it works.
Good enough, as they say.
Good enough. And you would never tell, honestly. Like, unless you like grab the screen and start reefing on it, which, you know, please don't. Actually, I might do that to your machine when I come see it.
Grab the screen and reef on it?
Just reef on it.
Yeah, I mean, how else are you going to know if it's good or not?
Right? I'm very excited for when I get to come check that machine out at some point.
Yes, same. It'll be interesting to get your take on it.
Well, I mean, it's shiny and new. I'm going to say it's lovely.
I'll put a bow on it for you.
Oh, thank you very much. Well, on that note, I think we're at a natural close to this episode. I very much enjoyed it, mate. It's always good to catch up with you, and hopefully we'll be catching up and talking about more exciting stuff for many weeks to come.
I'll look forward to it.
Yeah, and I hope everyone is listening looks forward to it too. Please send us questions if you have them, suggestions, feedback. Tell Nick you hate his ginger face or whatever you want.
My stupid voice.
It's weird listening to yourself, isn't it?
It is weird. I did feel like a psychopath listening to the last episode.
It's okay. I do it every myself. Week, so we can.
But you are a psychopath. So.
Yes, obviously. Well, I hope everyone has a lovely week, and we'll see you next week.
Cheers.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.